Listeners and viewers, Ron Stefanski here with yet another episode of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the disruptors, those seemingly ordinary humans who are actually pretty extraordinary, in fact, making a difference in life as we know it in this ginormously disrupted world. And as you know, it has become a 5G wired, workforce augmented, technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, Web3 immersive, pandemic interrupted world out there. And stuff is happening everywhere, and stuff is happening right here in the D, which is why we're doing Disrupted in the D. We're telling the stories about the disruptors who are changing this very city brick by brick. And I have a superstar on the show today, and he is known here in NewLab as the Dean, and he has been one of the OGs at NewLab when it first opened. He's the CEO of ESPE, the Energy Safety.
We're going to get this right.
Yeah, we're going to get this right.
Yeah.
It's Energy Storage Safety Products International, ESPE. But, Ron, thank so much. We've been trying to get this together. Both of our schedules finally connected. And I want to jump right in because you have a really powerful story to tell with your origins right here in Detroit. And you helped this city during some of its worst hours as a member of the esteemed police and fire department and in the public school. So I want to hear about a little bit about your background here and how it impacted what you're working on now.
Well, thanks for having me on. You're right. We've been trying for quite a long time to sit down together and have this conversation. Ron Butler, I was on the fire department here for almost 25 years. I also taught in the public schools, and I decided to retire from both to make a bigger bet on myself and started a company called ESPE, ESSPI. We focus on battery safety writ large with a laser focus on product development and soft skills development for industry. Soft skills including training, standard operating procedures to design and development, emergency response procedures, et cetera. But happy to be here and would love to answer any questions you have. I'm a big nerd about this subject matter.
I know you are. And I kind of love to geek out here. So I'm known as someone who's, here's the thing. I've said this before. I am not a cool guy. I am a perennially uncool guy, but I am something else. As my sons convinced me that I would never be cool when they were teenagers, Dad, give it up. I became what I like to think of as cool adjacent. So I attract the really cool people to come and allow me to sit at their lunch table. So Ron, you are known as one of the cool people here who's making a huge difference. Yes, you are. You know this. Everyone's always clamoring. You're always in meetings with many, many businesses that intersect here. But let's go into the world of EV and the world of batteries. You know, consumers clearly know that there are big dangers with batteries in their vehicles, and lithium batteries have been banned from airports, and they occasionally still blow up or catch fire. And so this is a real issue, and it's probably one of the big breaking points that stops people from moving fully into EVs is the safety of them, right? I mean, one of the things we've always guaranteed in the automobile is safe passage of our newborn children from the hospital to home. We've never had a worry that somehow the car is going to explode in the middle of it. So talk to me about how you approach the safety of those batteries and how you help people to live safely in a world that's now going to be populated with a lot more battery power.
Absolutely. And I try to offer clarification on the risk. So real-world decisions can be made from decision-makers in an automotive OEM, logistics provider, down to the consumer. And I try to be as blunt as possible. EVs are extraordinarily safe.
They are.
They are extraordinarily. They're safer using a lot of metrics than a gasoline-powered car. And that comes from insurance industry research. That comes from organizations like NFPA, National Fire Protection Association. So the safety of an EV writ large is overplayed, or the lack of safety
is overplayed
by media. That being said, when we find batteries, which are really the heart and soul of an EV, in failure modes, it is generally in a warehousing environment, a transport environment, a manufacturing environment, where you have thousands, tens of thousands, millions of battery cell units together.
And that's where. So it's not really a risk to be driving a car with a battery. It's really, right.
As a matter of fact, we just received some insurance industry information that tells us if the number of EV cars were commensurate with the number of ICE or internal combustion engine cars, if, then the opportunity for failure on the internal combustion or gasoline cars 100 times more likely than an EV.
Wow.
That's an amazing stat.
That is an amazing stat, you know. I think it's obviously clear we need to get that word out. Mm-hmm. But also, you talked about soft skills, and you're not just about the safety. You're about training a whole. I mean, as we think about EVs and as we think about mobility differently, we have to train a whole new generation with a whole new, entirely different set of skills, right? Mm-hmm. The electric car of the future doesn't have the need of a mechanic to be working on it. It's going to need someone that knows how to use a computer. It's going to need someone that knows how to be a good tech, but it's not going to. So can you talk a little bit about the soft skills that you're training for and also the skills that you see as essential in this new emerging EV world?
That is the question of the hour, the day, the year, the decade. What or whom do we need from a labor perspective moving forward? Higher skill levels,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily college, could be, but ranging from a technician level all the way up to a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Who's required? How does this change from the previous paradigm? So an internal combustion engine has 10,000 components in it. Let's use that as a base number. An EV is going to come in at 7,000 components because there's less required. Mm-hmm. It is basically the car, build architecture, a body, etc. The electronics, which is really what EVs are mobile
electronic devices, platforms.
Yeah, right. Really where it's going or is. And then trying to imagine what the battery looks like, because the battery is the heartbeat, and those are getting better and better. But those three things are really the essential build architecture of a modern EV. And it makes, or clearly making, the ICE a dinosaur. You hear a lot about the slowdown of EV production, EV sales. Look, there's a hockey curve that's planned for 2030, which I still think is in place, where EVs are going to explode. Regardless of what, you know, the chatter is coming out of DC, we know there's too much money invested in this stuff. The Chinese competition is knocking on the door saying, this is it. And they're absolutely right. We were down in Mexico City a couple of months ago, and we were stunned at the Chinese manufacturers who set up shop and sales in Mexico City. Just blown away. The current, you know, 145% tariff really tells us that if those Chinese manufacturers were allowed into a United States market, they would still be able to sell that EV much cheaper with tariffs in place.
I was reading somewhere recently where the Chinese have a $12,000 entry-level vehicle, fully electric, and we don't have anything close, not even close to that. So without tariffs, you're right. We need the opportunity, and I'm not a trade wizard, but we need the opportunity to grow our own business here in the United States. Talk to me a little bit about the workforce as you see it differently than you did or we did growing up in Detroit here, where everyone, all of my grandparents and uncles were, you know, tradesmen and worked in the factories and were skilled trades, millwrights, mechanics, all of that. And a lot of that's going to be different, right?
We spend a lot of our time as an organization understanding the marketplace. Right. We're not the best at it, to be clear, but we have to have a cursory understanding at least of our markets and where our bread is butter. Right. So we have explored a lot of this. We've done some white papers on, you know, how the UAW, for example, will shrink over the coming. And no one wants to hear this. Right. AI is a real threat. Machine learning, robotics. They're telling you what's coming,
right,
as they lay off people. So I don't want to be the bearer of the worst news, but I also think once you understand it, it could potentially offer an opportunity to pivot. It might not be what your grandfather did, but provided that one would look into the opportunity and pivot with it, there's clearly space to grow.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing that we've learned about technology over the decades is that, yes, it does replace the need for certain people, but it also creates the need for other jobs in its place. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, we're talking, like you said, may not require college, but nonetheless are good paying skill jobs that require some level of skill set that's post high school, but maybe not necessarily college.
I absolutely agree. And how we define that is the real question. You know, what do the jobs look like? What are the requirements or prerequisites? So I know as an individual that I have to attain this level of knowledge, and I would open myself up to employment as we move forward. But I think at the end of the day, those questions have to be answered very quickly and succinctly. Company comes in and does battery recycling, for example. What does a technician need to have in their back pocket in order to be employed with us?
Right.
We approach things from a fire safety perspective, or failure safety perspective. So we engage with industry. We engage with all the automotive OEMs, their tier one and two suppliers and below. We engage with logistics companies because we're primarily a battery logistics company. Mm-hmm. And the answers to the what, when, why, and how aren't necessarily there yet. So we spend a lot of our time engaging with our customers to say, hey, what do you need from us?
Right, right. Now, what about the range? You know, when we're looking at batteries, you know, we talked about safety. So safety, as you suggested, has been, you know, check the box. We are more safe in an electric vehicle than an internal combustion vehicle. So that's good news on that front. The other big gating factor has to be battery power. You know, how we have grown accustomed to going from point A to point B on a tank of gas or with a ready supply of gas replenishment all along the interstates, all along every street and avenue. So where do you see battery capacity catching up, and where do you see the technology catching up where we get to a 600 or 700 mile range with the batteries themselves, but also with the repowering stations?
Well, the infrastructure is going to take a while. And even now we're looking at new thought processes around charging. Triple charging on a road that we have right next door to us at New Lab right here is good innovation. I don't know about scale, right? There's going to be a lot. So that's a $1 trillion issue. I do see, you know, some car companies making inroads on that 600 plus range, which is it.
That's a magic number, right? 600 miles, right?
Yeah, Lucid, for example. I mean, really good product. I'm really impressed by that. And there's others. I think, you know, GM, and I don't like to call companies out rightly or wrongly, but I see a suite of vehicles that they have that are really impressive to me, right? How do we get to that hockey stick point, that upward projection where we know that this is going to – people in my neighborhood, I talked to my neighbors today, just this morning, they bought two GM Electrics, two,
Wow.
Had an installer. And then like we're talking around the neighborhood, and I should be the one to notice it, right? Stunned at how many EVs are in our neighborhood. Just blown away. The issues were, safety is one of them. How do we make the battery safer so people aren't, you know, using that as part of their decision-making process or no decision-making process? Range anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get from here to Chicago
safely without being stuck somewhere without power? Right.
I think they've conquered that for most intents and purposes. The other one is the cost of batteries, which every day they go down, down, and down. So I think that trifecta is in place. Now, how do we convince people to go ahead and make that purchase? Some of it will happen organically, but I think the autos should come together, solve the problems together, share inputs, share outputs, and then work together to not just sell their product, but sell the idea.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So I want to pivot now. We were talking off camera about an initiative you're very excited mm-hmm. about. Let's hear more about it.
So it's called NatFirst, NAT-FIRST. And the first stands for Fuel Innovation Research Safety and Testing. And what it is an opportunity for all automotives to collaborate on the first 10%. And what I mean by that is there are challenges that have been brought about in the last couple of months relative to, you know, how companies move ahead. Every company wants to be vertical, right? I want to do it all inside. They can't do it. It's too expensive. It's inefficient. So why don't the companies come together and collaborate on the first 10% of any platform? Meaning, for example, just as an example, safety is an issue. So let's work together to solve the safety problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we collaborate on that. Why aren't you collaborating on safety? It's an issue that we all share. This is not a competitive issue. And then we would look at the remaining 90% as ways to compete. Another example would be, so you have multiple companies working together on a chassis platform, including a battery. And we accept that together. If you really think about it, is that a competitive advantage?
Right.
And then maybe company A, B, and C say, okay, we'll collaborate on the platform. And at the end of the day, the 90% is you know, what the car looks like, how it performs beyond that. And that's where we can be.
So when you're talking about this first 10% model, what it sounds to me like is we're moving from vertically integrated businesses mm-hmm. to almost vertically interlocking businesses.
Absolutely.
So they're not owned by the same people, but they have codependencies and they work one with another to get this done.
That's it.
Right.
That's absolutely it. And we've had really strong buy-in from a lot of OEMs, tier one, tier two suppliers and beyond. And they know that, I don't want to get political, but they know that where we find ourselves right now is so different than what they've seen before that they have to behave differently.
Right. So you've been listening, Disrupted Followers, to Ron Butler, the founder and CEO of ESPE, right here at NewLab, and talking about battery safety and the future of EV here in Detroit, where we're working to create and reinvent mobility into the next century. We invented it right here in Detroit, folks, in the last century, and we're on our way to reinventing it in this next one. Any last words for our audience, Ron?
No, one thing I would offer again is I think that writ large, battery safety issues are a thing for industry. I don't think they're much of a thing for retail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they are on the retail side, a dealership, you know, brings in an EV, we've identified a problem, we have to treat it. We have to treat that vehicle differently. How do we transport and store it really is key. What metrics are used to guarantee or move towards guarantee the battery safety as a whole? It's not a consumer issue.
That's good to hear. That's very reassuring.
I would love to sell my products to consumers. It's a big market. It doesn't exist. Now, you will have anecdotal and direct evidence of failures. We have a friend of ours who had an experience in their home in Bloomfield, outside of Detroit, where their electric vehicle burned up and nearly took out his family. Now that's real, right?
Right.
But the numbers tell us that
it's rare. What you're saying. Right. Well, this won't be the first time that the press has been a little unsympathetic to the folks that are moving Detroit forward in the automotive sector. They've not always been friends to our industry here. But anyway, Ron, thank you for joining me today on Disrupt Ed. And we have to do this again. Like you said, we've got to nerd out and geek out here because there's a lot of technology happening around us, and it is disrupting mobility as we know it. So thanks for your role in all of this, and thanks for joining us. For those of our listening and viewing audience out there, get disrupted with us. You know what that means. Engage with us. Give us your comments. Give us your feedback. Give us your ideas. And we look forward to having you on another episode of Disrupt Ed. Thanks so much.